get up to 9, 10 o'clock at night or later handling support, I think you have to figure out pretty quickly, you know, where's the value in that?
Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. Today, we're talking all about support with Kyle Brown from WP SaaS. Kyle, how you doing?
I'm good. Good, great.
Awesome. How are you? Awesome. Yeah, we're doing good. We're doing good. Glad to dig into something that is, I think, near and dear to everyone's heart and a topic that is super important for a lot of reasons, both in kind of terms of acquisition and retention of our customers. But I guess before I get ahead of myself, for folks who don't know who you are, can you introduce kind of who you are and what you do?
Sure. So my name is Kyle Brown. As you stated, I consider myself to be an operations professional. Spent a lot of time in operations at enterprise companies, but these days I spend most of my time trying to take some of that enterprise expertise and help founders of small companies, particularly SaaS companies or WordPress plugin developers, and just try to take that and tweak it so that it's something that can be a value add for those business owners.
You know, I think this is fantastic, kind of like a productized service or service as a service. How long have you guys been doing this?
One of the products or productized services that I launched in 2014 in order to help founders with some of that operations expertise from the enterprise level is called WP SaaS, and that was launched right after a MicroConf in 2014. And so we've been at it now for almost, hard to believe, almost 4 years. And what we do at WP SaaS is essentially our value proposition is we help plug-in developers or developers who have built plug-in businesses. Even if you're not a developer, if you have a WordPress plugin that's premium, it's sold, and you have you're generating some revenue, and you want to have your support handled or outsourced by another party, we have a team of people that handles that, and we've been doing that since May 2014.
Very cool. So, obviously, as a support professional, you know, you are focused more on the, let's call it the, we've moved on from the single person and now we're kind of moving to a larger, I don't want to do it anymore or I can't handle it anymore kind of model. Would you say that that's accurate, Kyle?
I would say it's, we don't want to necessarily, so our customers fall into three buckets. Really not interested in handling support anymore because they want to focus on strategy and marketing and all of those things that are required to scale the business. We have customers that, aren't interested in spending their time on that part of the business, more interested in spending their time on the development and the product side of the business. And then there's sort of a third kind of person that we see, which is, someone who's looking at it purely as a business who's acquired the plugin possibly, and if they're looking at it as a revenue-generating element as a part of a portfolio perhaps, and they're not interested in coding or providing support. They're really just looking at building up a business around it and having it be an investment that gives them a return without being involved in the day-to-day operations, so to speak.
Okay. So getting to the bucket one folks for a second, the folks that want to kind of offload it from their plate, based on what you've seen so far in the people that WP SaaS has helped or from your experience as a support professional, when should somebody consider hiring a support rep or outsourcing the support themselves? Is there a magic number of revenue or users? When and where should that happen in their journey, or when should they be thinking about it? Is there some indicator that's like a red flag that says, hey, maybe you shouldn't be doing this anymore because it's a little too much?
Yeah, that is a good question. And I think the answer really is it depends. I haven't seen any specific, information from the folks that I've talked to, both clients and folks that decided not to, that the service wasn't right for them. Like, I've talked to a lot of people in the 4 years, and I can't see that I've seen any real trend there as far as when the time is right, but I can tell you that there is one thing for sure that I know where, in terms of time, it needs to be right, and that is with the actual founder. The founder really has to be at a place where they are willing to give this part of the business, or to hand this part of the business over. That is actually, to me, from what I've seen, more important than any actual number. For example, you know, some products have very low volumes of support because they just do, whether it's because it's developed in a certain way or whether there's a ton of documentation on it, so customers aren't really needing any help. There's a whole lot of different reasons why your support volumes may be high or low, but as far as a number, I say that to say that, you know, you could be seeing five a day, and that may be more than you want. Some people may say five a day is perfect for them to stay involved, and they don't need to outsource that. So it really depends on the person. But again, that one thing that I do know for sure that has to happen is the person's mindset has to be at a place where they are no longer interested in being hands-on, being the person who's actually providing the support. That timing is actually much more important than any number from what I've seen.
I tell you, I would give my right arm for five support requests in a day. that happens on Sundays for us. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think it kind of resonates with both Dave and I. I guess I'll speak from Dave, from what, Dave, shit, 9 months ago when you transferred a lot of your support over?
Oh, it's been over a year.
It's been you lucky dog.
February 2017.
Okay. So you realized it was your time, and you needed to do something else so you could focus on other aspects of your business. And we are getting very close. We're there, I think, with Castos and Seriously Simple Podcasting, and now it's time to transfer this over. And so the question really is, like, okay, we know. I would say we. I know it's time. I have things that are much a better use of my time, but I also know that support is super, super important for retention and minimizing churn and increasing conversion rates and onboarding customers successfully. And for me to think that I can just go hire somebody and train them and get them onboarded and them just like do like a Vulcan mind meld, right? For me to transfer all of my knowledge to them and then be 100% on day one is not possible, right? So how do you guys step into a new organization and function at any kind of level in the first month? Because, I mean, for me, we're going through that process right now, and it's going well, but it's taking a while. So how do you speed that process up, and, like, what would you like to see when you step into a new situation?
So the one-month time frame that you gave there, we have a two-week onboarding period that's standard. Sometimes it takes a little longer than that. Sometimes it takes a little less than that, but it's going to be at a minimum, it's going to be 2 weeks. And it really depends, again, that's definitely not something you want to rush for all of the reasons that you gave. I think one of the biggest concerns that I have seen and heard from founders is, you know, I don't want my support to be, I don't want low quality support, because that's going to hurt my bottom line. It's going to hurt my, my ability to, I convert a lot of those people based on support. Like all of those kinds of things I've heard, and I agree with those things. But one of the things that I don't hear founders talking a lot about are, you know, you're going to have a segment of your support that's just, it's sort of the cost of doing business. People who are looking for things that are listed in the FAQs already on your site, you know, people asking you questions about things that are literally documented in the application itself. You're just going to have a segment of support requests that just aren't a good use of your time and aren't going to help you with churn, so to speak, because they're things that are just repetitive, that you're just going to keep seeing over and over and over again, whether it's you doing the support or someone else. And as a founder, those things probably aren't the best use of your time. So that onboarding period, what we try to do is, well, first of all, you know, our service isn't for everyone, and I'm being a little selfish here, just talking specifically about our service. Our service isn't for everyone, just like outsourcing. Support isn't for everyone. But if you've got a product and it's mature and it's documented well, and you can answer most of the requests that you're getting or categorize them as tier one or very low touch types of questions, then, you know, it's not hard for us to become a part of that process within your business, or for you to transition that part of your business over to us. We are a tier one focused primarily company, although we are trialing some tier two services now, but we are focused primarily on tier one. And tier one really isn't that difficult to transition. It's the more technical, I need some code changed, I need some features added, I need a bug fixed. Those kinds of things are not things that we are involved in for most of our customers. And those things are the places where it's a lot trickier, and it's a lot harder for that person to become a part of your company. So that's part of the reason why the business was set up to be tier one support, because those things we actually believe belong with someone who is literally a part of your company, or someone who has a much more extensive training period and a much more extensive onboarding period. So not that it can't be outsourced, because if you hire somebody, you are outsourcing in a sense, but it's easier when you're focused on a specific task to become a part of a company than it is when you have things that are much closer to the core of the company.
Okay, so
question.
Yeah, no, totally. That's wonderful, and I think a lot of us probably can relate to, like, okay, yeah, how do I reset my password? Where's the thing for this, and how does this widget work over there? And it's all covered in the documentation, and those kind of, like you said, tier one, how do I cancel my account or my trial or get a refund, and all that's pretty straightforward. But then if you look at, like, the goal from a founder's perspective, the goal of offloading support is that so we have more time and mental space and energy to focus on other parts of our business. And if we're always one foot in Help Scout or Intercom or whatever, right? To answer some of these questions, how do we kind of actually take ourselves out of support mode so that we can focus at a higher level on things? Maybe the answer is you'll never get there, right? But that's not okay. I think we all should want to get there, because, I mean, you think about, like, intercom, right? Des Trainer doesn't do support, right? So how do we get ourselves from where you and me and Dave are, and probably a lot of people listen to this show, to a place more like that where we can say, okay, you own all of support. And don't come to me unless the sky is falling. And if the sky is falling, there's a process for it, and this is what you do. But I shouldn't be involved in any kind of like regular basis with support. I think that's a lot of people's goal, is to say, I'm going to hire somebody and pay them well, and I want them to own the whole process. And like, for me, it's like customer success, right? It's like it's support and increasing trial to conversion ratio and reducing churn and all that kind of stuff should fall under the person that owns this part of the business.
Yeah, so I think so. For me personally, I have a product that I'm not involved with support at all. I very rarely am involved with the exception of looking at a monthly report just to see what kinds of issues are coming in, and obviously if there's something that is that breaks, that's I don't know, an act of God, something that happens that's no one can control, then I would have to get involved. But I don't have that today. I don't have to be involved today with the products that I have. And that's because I build processes and systems around everything that I'm going to be involved with from day one. I've heard some people say, well, you know, that slows you down. Yes, it slows you down, but it puts you in a position later on where you aren't involved with your business, and you can hand it over to someone else to run it for you, which for me is a big part of why I do what I do. I want to be in a position where I don't have to be involved. I can choose to, but I don't have to. And I think one of the ways to do that is you put systems in place early on that processes, systems, some people call them SOPs. The first thing that has to happen, again, is the founder has to be mentally in a place where they're willing to do that. A lot of founders say they want what you described, Craig, in terms of that freedom, but they aren't willing to step away. And you can't be in both places at the same time. You have to be willing first to say, someone else is going to do this. They may not do it the way I do it. And it may not be it may not be done exactly the way I would do it, but it's going to be done. And that's the first thing. And the second thing is you empower people to do that by giving them the training, but putting the processes in place first and then giving them the training that they need to actually execute on that for you. And if you do find some things that you just find are too difficult to run through that process, then it may mean that there's either something with the product that needs to be improved, or there's something that maybe possibly needs to be removed from the business. But there shouldn't be anything that you can't put. Once the mindset's right, that you can't put process in place and then train and then step away from. There shouldn't really be anything in the business that you can't do that with. There's a lot of major corporations around the world that do this all the time, every day, and they have millions and millions of customers, and they seem to be able to make it work. So I think it's just those basic three things. And that's not that may not be a complete list for everyone, but I think that's a good foundation, mindset, process, and training.
Cool. Okay.
So kind of riffing off of that, Kyle, I'm sure you've had experience either, you know, as a support professional or specifically in WP SaaS, when people need to make that transition for, okay, I've got one person dealing with support and they're kind of in charge of everything, to actually having a full team behind it, you know, starting with two, maybe three people right away, depending on the volume, I guess.
Right.
How would you bridge that gap of you've got this one person who's kind of in charge of everything to now you've got this team where it's a distributed responsibility? How do you keep them from dropping the ball? How do you make that work in transition in practice?
So my recommendation there would be, and again, every business is different, right? But my recommendation would be, you know, you have to be knowledgeable of the fact that, hey, one person's been doing this for, I don't know, let's just say a long time. And if there are no processes in place and there is no training, that person is going to be pretty busy helping create the process and the training because they have all the intellectual knowledge and it's in their head and they're doing things probably in ways that they've just become accustomed to doing them because they've been the only person. But the minute that you decide as the business owner that, you know, we need to make this into more of a something that's a system that anyone can follow or that the right persons can follow, then it has to be removed, extracted from that individual's head and put down and documented in some method that can be followed by someone else. And I think you start very small. My recommendation always is you just start very small. You pick something that's really a note, that's an easy win. That's, you know, maybe, for example, something that's just in the FAQs that you get 5 or 6 times a day. And you get a resource. You document how those are handled and what you want the resource to do to handle it. And then you take that responsibility away from the individual and you have someone else do it. And you measure, just like you know, launching a product, right? You just measure it. You see how it works. You tweak it. You pivot. And then in 2 weeks, maybe you add something else. And you keep doing that until you find out which things actually do lend themselves well to that kind of environment and which things don't work out that well once you hand them off. And I think you just have to keep, you know, keep going through trial and error and monitoring it to make sure that it's going to work for you. You have to keep experimenting so you find out what's going to work for you. It won't be perfect. I think, you know, it won't be perfect just because people are all different. And, you know, your tone, your responsibility as that founder is to just keep reminding people and setting the tone, whomever you're trialing or you're hiring. Just, you know, you have to be a good ambassador for constantly saying, here's the tone I want you to take. I know you're not me, but here's the tone. I want every customer to feel this way or that way whenever they interact with us. And I think eventually, you know, you're going to find that that will work. And if it doesn't, again, I think you have to look at, you know, just try to drill down to why it's not working. There's always something. Is it the product? Is it some one of our processes? Is it right? Is it maybe we need some more videos on the site? I mean, there's always going to be something at the root as to of any problem that you do find that's not working properly. And it's usually in my experience just that one person's always done it, and they've always done it their way, and they've never even explored other ways to do it or documented other ways to do it because they didn't have time or they just didn't think anybody else could do it. But you'd be surprised at what someone else will bring to the table if you give that someone else a chance to do something that may have traditionally been done by one person.
So practically, for folks who are wanting to kind of take this step, from your perspective as someone who's received a lot of internal documentation and training and onboarding from your customers, what tools or form do you like that knowledge transfer to be in?
This is a good question. Well, I'm much more a objective guy and much less a tools guy. Trust me, I love software and I love tools, and there's some great ones out there. But I think sometimes we get too caught up in the tools and not really, we never really set a really clear objective.
Let me be clear. I'm looking for a tool to solve my problem, not for me to actually do the work.
That's a human being you want.
Yeah, right.
So I think Google Docs gives you enough power. It gives you enough to do this, as long as it's something that multiple parties can collaborate on from different locations in the world, and it's secure, and it has some level of revision tracking, I think Google Docs lends itself well to that. It stores all your media, screenshots, videos, text. I think Google Docs lends itself well to that. There's a there's Slack, you know, any chat tool, but I like Slack in particular just because it's the integrations that it has. I think it integrates with everything. I think that anything that has integration available, Slack integrates with. I think that's really important because you're online and you're in multiple tools as a support person. You're searching knowledge base, you're searching Google, you're searching Help Scout. And I just think Slack is just a really good tool for communicating with other team members or the founder and having information be delivered to it. Just reduces the amount of swivel chair activity that happens. I think those two are really big. Google Docs, Slack. Obviously, I like Help Scout a lot because it's based on email. And it's very simple. In my experience, most of our clients are using that. And I think there's a reason for that. Those three things. And I'm going to go ahead and throw in one more component that I think is very valuable. Whatever you're using on the front end to actually as an intake tool for your customers, primarily usually a contact form. I really like Gravity Forms a lot just because there's so many things that you can do where you can apply logic that is specific to your business so that the support requests, when they do come in, they are you're showing certain customers certain things before they actually make it to Help Scout. There's just a lot of Gravity Forms just has a lot of a tremendous amount of flexibility on things that you can do during the intake process versus just having an email address or a generic form that everybody sees and they're all seeing, all customers are seeing the same thing and they're all just landing in your inbox at Help Scout or whatever your ticketing tool is. That all has to be curated once it gets to you. I think Gravity Forms has a really good, has the tools and the features that allow you to make a lot of changes. So yeah, Help Scout, Slack, Gravity Forms, and yeah, Help Scout, Slack, Gravity Forms, and Google Docs.
Cool.
I think they're really good.
Cool. So since you brought up Help Scout, I have to ask about chat. Do you guys support chat in your business?
We do have a product, a service that we're trialing where we hire someone where we look at your objectives and your goals. And if one of those happens to be chat, then we hire someone, we train them, and they'll basically provide support in whatever method that you feel was a need for your business. So we don't have a lot of that now. All of our support, if you're not using that, that's a custom service. If you're not using that, then everything else we offer is email-based only.
Gotcha. Okay.
But in terms of, okay, so, I mean, you've had some experience with chat support in general, and I'm curious to hear what your perspective is. You know, what when you put chat on a site, you know, there's a certain expectation that comes with that. How does it sort of change the support dynamic? I mean, do you find that customers read less or interact less with the FAQ and the knowledge base and stuff like that because they've got this chat and so they're like, ah, screw that, I'll just go talk to somebody? Or do you find that the questions are better when they're talking to somebody on chat?
Okay, so, I mean, from my experience, even before I started this business, just in the industry, your chat is definitely a different animal, without a doubt. I find that the expectations on chat, one of the biggest differences is people expect you to give them an answer immediately when they're chatting with you. Despite the fact it doesn't really matter how complex the issue they might have is, they kind of expect by the time the chat ends that they're going to have an answer or a solution to their problem. I think that folks that chat tend to be less likely to read or have read any of your health documentation on your site. I think the expectation with chat is a lot more instantaneous. There's a huge expectation that your responses, everything that is going to be instantaneous. Like instant gratification is what someone wants when they're chatting. With email, we see people who are busy. A lot of times they kind of they can still be very conscious of the amount of time that it takes you, but they are less intrusive about it. They'll send you the email and they're kind of expecting that you'll get back to them within 24 hours. That seems to be the, unless you've told them something other than that on your support page, that people seem to be a lot more flexible when it comes to email. And again, with the other thing that I've noticed too with chat is your support person, they kind of need to be they kind of have to have the talent to be able to think a lot more quickly than they would if it were email. So I think it kind of, it's really those two things. You just, it's really just time, right? I think the expectation on time is a lot higher. Time to resolution is a lot higher for customers on chat, and I think customers that chat with you are less likely to, you know, with some exceptions, but less likely to spend time looking through your knowledge base.
Okay. So if you were to advise somebody who's doing a single founder kind of business, would you suggest that chat is a reasonable level of support, or would you just say, steer clear of this, man?
I would probably say, I mean, you know, obviously I would want to sit down and learn all of the details, but yeah, I hear your question. I would probably advise that as a single founder, especially if you still feel very strongly about being involved in your support, that you should definitely not do chat in the beginning. If you do decide to do chat, it shouldn't necessarily be support. Maybe it's only pre-sales where you kind of have the boundaries around the types of questions that you're going to get. And if someone does go outside those boundaries, you can point them to the email support. But unless you have a product that is extremely complicated, and even then we're still talking about pre-sales, and maybe your sales page doesn't quite effectively communicate what you do. Pre-sales, yes. But support, I don't think there's many situations where I would recommend someone provide chat support, and not in the beginning anyway.
Cool. Thanks.
So, you know, I guess I'll give my experience, because we run through Intercom on Castos and Sirius and Simple Podcasting. And my experience has been, it's a double-edged sword, where we have customers who come in and get answers really quick because we are there a lot. We probably spend more resources, my time and us hiring support people, to man the chat. But I think overall, I don't know if it's positive or not. I would like to think it is, because I think we both engage with people who have questions and customers who are trialing and have some questions about how they get onboarded, so that we keep more people than I think we probably would with chat. But I think it partly has to do with the type of customer that we have, where they're used to chat with things like, you know, web hosting providers all have live chat tech support, and a podcast hosting tool is kind of most like that than anything else I can imagine. I guess we've taken the view of, like, a lot of other people are doing it, so we kind of need to. And the silver lining that I guess I'm trying to draw from it is we have a lot of discussions with people that I don't think we would have over email. I think we do have some people who come in and say, you're not there, this sucks, which is frustrating because we put a lot of resources into it. But at the same time, we have a lot of people that we save from churning or failing their trial, just because, yeah, we're right there a lot. So, yeah, I do hear what you're saying and agree that if you cannot do chat, it might be good. And especially if you can put boundaries around it, like only offer the widget on certain pages. I've heard that as kind of a strategy of like only offer the chat widget on the pricing page or something, and have only and have only email on your knowledge base and stuff. I don't even know if Intercom offers that kind of stuff. I know you can only show it on certain pages, but I don't know. I think it's always available.
Oh, you can totally show it on certain pages. You can just include the JavaScript snippet on certain pages.
But in their help docs, I don't know if you can do that or not.
No, I don't know about that. But, I mean, my experience with chat, like, if I had to offer chat for the plugins, I would be, like, overwhelmed and just drowned in people asking all kinds of questions.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be using all the resources that we put together for them. They wouldn't be using the screencast. They wouldn't read the knowledge base. They'd just be sending me chats all friggin' day long. And I'm like, nope, never going to happen. Not going to put any fucking chat out there. Never going to happen.
Is this a WordPress type of customer only?
Yeah, this is my WordPress plugins, yeah.
Yeah, see, and I think there too, WordPress is a... I'm a big fan of the WordPress ecosystem. I like the product. I like the community, but it's an open source product. And there are a lot of people in the community that expect, they have expectations that everything is as free as the code is, including support.
Yes, you put it very kindly. You put it very kindly, Kyle. Yes, there are I would say there's a bunch of entitled people in the WordPress space that are demanding that you give them your time, your efforts, everything, your customizations, your advice, all of it for free. And you're like, no, that's not what free means, my friend. Open source ain't free.
And make your product work with my custom plugin and my custom theme, or, you know, you're a very, very bad person. So I think, you know, and like that situation, right, it comes back around to the product again, though, right? If you have a really solid SaaS product that you built and it's a premium product, you know, you're not going to get hit with, you know, make it integrate with my theme as much as you are if you have that chat out there for WordPress plugin. So I think that, you know, you kind of just, it's really no silver bullet. You have to figure out what's best for you. And I hate giving that answer because I hear that answer sometimes when I'm looking for a specific answer, but it really is like support is a touchy subject for a lot of founders and companies, large and small. So you kind of have to find the right mix. I will say this though, Craig, you mentioned something very important, like the conversion rates. I hear that argument made a lot about if you give good support, people will convert, but no one seems to ever be tracking that. And if you're not, I'm not saying you aren't, but a lot of founders I've talked to aren't. But and I would say to them, if you aren't tracking that, then how do you measure whether to keep giving that effort to whether it's chat or email support for a free product, or whether it's chat for certain products? Like, how do you measure? If you're not measuring it, how do you know that it's bringing, that it's converting, that it's bringing any value back to your business? I think that's important.
I'm certainly one of the guys doing exactly that, Kyle. I've been saying that for years. Like, if I don't offer support to the free people, I don't get as many paying customers. And part of the reason that it's hard to track is that, one, you know, up until about a year and some change ago, we weren't really using Help Scout to track that as well. So I didn't have the ability to tag and say, oh, here's a free customer, here's a paid customer. Now I've got that in place, but I still don't really do anything with it. You know, I still get people that use the paid form of support, and in the license key field, they just type nonsense or say, I don't have a license key, or N/A. So that data is very contaminated at this point. But I have, you know, anecdotally, I can say, well, yeah, there's a lot of people that just contact me and say, I'm having trouble setting up the free plugin. Oh, and I'm going to buy it. But have I tracked it all the way through the funnel? I haven't. And, you know, honestly, I probably should. But even if I were to track it and say, hey, look, you know, I got 3.8% of all free users are, you know, converting, I'd probably still do it because honestly, there's just a lot of users out there, and you know, do you really know which ones are the right ones to talk to when you're getting your main set of traffic from WordPress.org? Like, you just don't know, right?
Sure, sure. And I think that comes along with the territory, right? Because you know, .org is a repository for free products, so you're going to, you should have the expectation that a certain number of people are going to fall into that category of, well, I just want you to support me. I think, though, if you're a founder and you're struggling, you know, you're up to 9, 10 o'clock at night or later handling support, I think you have to figure out pretty quickly, you know, where's the value in that? If it's something you can handle, that's a different conversation. But if you're drowning and, you know, you can't keep up, then you're not offering a service anyway because you're killing yourself. And eventually, there may not be a product or anybody to support it. So, you know what I mean? I think you kind of have to figure it. You have to balance test and figure it out. But you should definitely track it, though.
Yeah. So I should be doing a better job of that. Thanks for adding one more thing to my plate,
right,
Kyle.
I feel like shit right now.
I'm being shamed into something else I'm not doing here. I'll just add that to my hall of shame.
Right, right. So, all right, Kyle. So for folks who are now ashamed like Dave and I and want to go out and kind of up their systems and processes and training and onboarding for their support reps or building their support system, where would you point folks to learn more, get educated and inspired to up their game here?
To a degree, I do want people to feel ashamed. If feeling shame is going to put them in a position where they are moving their business up and to the right, because sometimes it takes that. I get shamed all the time myself in business. So if that's what it takes to get you to move up and to the right, then you know, I don't feel bad about that. I think you just have to take the baby steps, though. There's a lot of good content out there. I have a book, and I want to plug that book. But there's a book that was written by a gentleman on processes, and the name escapes me. I'll send it to you guys at the show. It's a very popular book, and it has to do with it's a business book, and it has to do with basically building systems around your business. I would start with that. And again, I'm going to give it to you after the show. I can't think of it right now. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. We'll put it in show notes for sure.
Yeah. It's a very popular book. Awesome. I would start there. I know PLD has some stuff out there about processes and systems. PLD, founder of Balsamic. And, you know, I'll kind of just start with some of the things. And I know there are other founders who have written on the subject. Sweet Process has some documentation, a ton of interviews, actually, about documentation and processes and building systems. And they also offer a system application that can help you do it. That's paid. Again, you can do it with Google Docs if you're just starting out. Checklist. There's a Checklist Manifesto is another book that's really good about putting checklists into place. It's actually a very agile way to do process without having to sit there and crank out a lot of documentation. Checklists sometimes are very effective and easier to get started with versus writing up a bunch of maybe longer systems. I would recommend those things, definitely. I guess I will shamelessly plug my book because it's the only one that I can remember the name of. Systematizedbook.com. It's about a 100-page book. I wrote it for founders who don't have time. It's very short, and it basically outlines a lot of these things. It's systematizedbook.com.
Awesome. And we'll put that in the show notes as well. Great. So Kyle, for folks who want to kind of follow up with you and learn more about what you do and ask you some questions about support and offloading support, where can they find you on the interwebs?
The interwebs. I am on Twitters at Kyle without the E Brown, K-Y-L Brown. Somebody snatched the name before I could get to it, at K-Y-L Brown. I spend a lot of time there. My company's website is WPSaaS.net, WPSaaS.net. And between those two places, you shouldn't have a problem tracking me down.
Awesome. Kyle, thanks so much for coming on today. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Craig. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, we had a great time today. So if you have any questions about how to build a support team or what process you would be curious about to improve your support game, please send us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. And if you've got a chance, we'd love to hear from you and a review on iTunes. The link will be in the show notes. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.